You need to get a degree in something. And so finally, at age 49, she got her degree in German. But anyway, that was a good year. I got on a plane at Norton Air Force Base in San Bernardino, and took it and got to Fort Lee, Virginia, and got my car and drove it up to New York or somewhere up there. And so it headed to Germany. And then I got my orders. I had my orders, so I went to Camp Fort Rucker, I guess. Anyway, I took the ship over to landed in Bremerhaven, Germany. Then we took a troop train down to Zweibrücken in Germany. And there was a first lieutenant was a troop train commander, and I was his assistant. I didn't know doodly squat, but anyway, he asked me one time, where are we? And I looked out, and Ausfahrt. Then went a little further. Where are we? Einfahrt. And we went a little further, and where are we? Hey, are we backing up? We're back at Ausfahrt. Ausfahrt is exit. Einfahrt is entry.
Oh.
So that's all I knew of German. But anyway, got down to Zweibrücken, and then headed up to Frankfurt, where our headquarters was. And so I went in and reported to the colonel, and he wasn't aware that I was coming. So he said to the other guy, I bet old Captain Kipps needs a helper. So I went down to Schweinfurt. Well, Captain Kipps was a good old boy who had been prisoner of war in the Philippines for several years. And he was an old supply sergeant, I guess. And so he got acquainted with one of the generals there that was also a prisoner. The general asked him, what do you want to be when you get out? Well, I should be about a captain, shouldn't I? So here was a captain the next day. So anyway, he was an interesting guy. Mm-hmm. And you'll have to have your mother tell him about it. But anyway, I guess I was young and flamboyant or something. Anyway, he decided to have me stationed up at Wildflecken, Wildflecken. That was a quartermaster supply area up there. So I was a quartermaster officer there. Mm-hmm. And I guess he needed to get me out of the way. Anyway, that was the best duty that I could have had. And my wife came over, and she lived in Niederwehren, which is out of Schweinfurt, for a little while. And then I was going up to Wildflecken and back about every day. And so then we finally moved up to Brückenau. Then later on, we moved into military housing up there. But Native Erin was a nice apartment. We had to get apartments or something because there wasn't many military housing in those days to speak of. So we got this top floor of a house, and the people that owned it were down below. And I remember I'd take my showers and everything over on camp, and this woman was getting awful worried about me because I never took a bath there. So I finally did, and it was a stove like, well, I don't know what. Anyway, we'd have to build a fire under it, like a wood fire or coal fire or something.
Yeah.
Heat up the water and so forth. Well, I did that once, and so I finally had to get across to her, because she didn't speak English, that I took a shower over in the camp. Then we moved on to Brookenau, and another young couple from the United States took our apartment there in Native Erin. But anyway, in Brookenau, we had a nice, it was a house, and this was a German Jewish guy had owned it, and he got run out when the Nazis, were after the Jews. And so then after the war, he came and reclaimed his property, and then he had in big old letters on the outside, whatever his name was, 19 something to 1994 or something. Anyway, we had this place, and he had a person that would come. He came back when he got the house back, and he'd go down and he'd have breakfast down at a restaurant. Maybe they'd charge him 2 marks. And maybe the next day they'd charge him 8 marks. And then maybe the next day 15 marks. So he finally got the idea they don't want me. So he moved someplace else. And so he had a gal there that would take care of his property for him. So we'd pay her and so forth. So anyway, she got to talking and telling Charlotte some German words on what to say when you'd go down, and she'd want to get her hair fixed. And so Charlotte would say, go in, and they'd say, she'd say, how much? Or they'd say, 15 marks. Oh, das zu teuer. That's too much. They'd look at her and they'd go down in price. But then we had an apartment with windows, and next door was a big hotel, and she'd notice these guys would be looking and looking at her. So she got nervous. So we were still Army of the Occupation. So I'd strap a carbine on and come home, and anyway, they thought she was a German lady. So we finally found out we should go down to the Rathaus, the place and register, so that they'd know who it was and so forth. So anyway, that, those just little things that would happen. So then we moved up to the base, and anyway.
Mm-hmm. Lee Kerr was born in Wurzburg.
Mm-hmm.
He was born on the base. Was that the base?
No, that Vielflecken was probably 50 miles from Wurzburg. But Wurzburg was the army hospital.
Okay.
So we, I got nervous because it was overdue, I thought. And so we, but we made arrangements for a military ambulance to take us down. Mm-hmm. And so Charlotte rode in the front with us, the driver, and I was in the back with the nurse was back there. And so I'd hold her hand up between the front and the back. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he was born down there, but I'll think about it after a while. So he had to stay in the hospital for a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But I brought her back home, and that was an experience in itself. Because here she was, and her baby was down 50 miles away.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, we got him and brought him back, and then when he was 6 weeks old, we had orders to come back to the United States. So we got on a plane in Frankfurt flew back. They had us all, we were prepared to stay in the hotel and wash my clothes or do something. But they said, hey, we've got a plane that's leaving at, you know, in 2 hours or so. Mm-hmm. So I told Charlotte, you know, so we got our clothes on and smelly and everything else. But it was a bunch of enlisted men, and we were about the only officer aboard. But they didn't have any, you know, any place for coffee or whatever, and mm-hmm. and the baby was irping, and anyway, but we got to, let's see, to Reykjavik, Iceland, and then we went on to New York City, I guess. But then they put us up in a hotel, and I didn't have any idea that military was paying for it or anything.
Yeah.
So I was out looking for places to stay that were cheaper than the $5 or $6 it cost, because we had a 2-bathroom, etc., in this hotel. And so finally figured out that the army had taken this whole floor of this hotel.
Oh.
And they charged us a pittance.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So anyway, then we got our car later, drove it on down to Washington, D.C. area, and saw Helen, Cecil, and them. Mm-hmm. And then we came back across the country and ended up in California. And then, whatever.
Now, did you decide early on to have a bunch of kids? How'd you end up with 5 kids?
Oh, just accidental, I suppose. No, I didn't have any notion of how many. Charlotte can probably tell you, but I don't know.
Well, I know you growing up, well, sort of only child, although you had cousins.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if you wanted to have a lot of big family to
No, but I was happy with the family, but, you know.
It was fun growing up with a lot of siblings. I appreciate it.
Turn it off, because I've got to go. I was the end of a
I wrecked my favorite car.
Place where you drive through, what is it? Not a tunnel, but...
Yeah, underpass or...
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and I stopped making a left turn. This guy came along and whooped me from the back end.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't hurt and the other guy wasn't hurt. But then the next day we had to go into court. And so then they took the car in into, where was that? North Carolina, I guess. Mm-hmm. And let's see, I guess we must have rented a car or something to come back. But anyway, we got back. And then the insurance paid us. And I went back and got stuff out of the trunk. But that was the end of that Mercury.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you had to, it gave you a little whiplash, I think. Didn't it bother your neck for a little while?
It may have, I don't know.
Let's see, what car did we have after the Mercury?
Well, we had a Buick. Then we had this Lincoln that I bought from Tregesser.
Yeah, that was in Memphis. I remember that. Big black Lincoln. Took that up to Canada that time.
Yeah, and
yes, it was my most unfavorite person. Couldn't stand that man.
She didn't like that car, I guess.
Yeah.
Because
she'd
get in Memphis, and it'd be 105 degrees out, and she couldn't get the windows to roll down.
Oh. Did have air conditioning, didn't it?
But I'm not sure if it worked or not. But.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember the car.
Anyway, yeah, I drove it over here and kept it a while and gave it to my secretary. Hmm. It's the last I ever heard of it.
Yeah. I remember having
a... We had a Buick.
I remember a Studebaker.
Yeah, we had a Studebaker way back when. I think Studebaker when I was in up in Ann Arbor.
Was that the one? Was there one you actually went out to California and had to drive it back?
Maybe yeah, that was my aunt's Studebaker.
Okay.
And I guess she gave it to me or something.
She had to drive it back across the country.
Yeah, I drove it back because I drove from Los Angeles to Oklahoma without stopping.
Oh my.
And then it's here a couple of days and then went on to, I guess we were in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I seem to remember, Studebaker, I seem to remember a light green and I seem to remember sort of a light gold were the two different ones that I'm remembering.
I don't know. We've had several cars.
Thank you. We bought the green one, and she had like, I don't know.
The brown one came from her. Yeah.
I think so.
Then in the DC time or somewhere, you had a VW Bug.
Yeah.
Not Bug. Excuse me. VW.
Yeah, that was in Wyoming.
Minivan, whatever. Wyoming.
Ooh, they look good, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Did you want them refrigerated?
Yeah, I'll stick it. Try to find a place for them.
I vaguely remember that, the VW, the Beetle, I guess. What do they call that thing? You know, it was a minivan
of the day. VW. No, it wasn't a Beetle.
It wasn't a Beetle.
No, the Beetle was a little VW van, but
yeah.
Remember Leichhardt fell out of it one time? Was that the story?
Yeah.
That's the one.
We were going around a curve in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
He fell out.
Oh, my.
Fortunately, we were going very slowly.
Yeah.
And he had on a heavy jacket.
Yeah.
And it saved him, really.
Good. Wow. Did y'all have that still in Maryland? I think I vaguely recall that VW. I just can't.
Well, we got rid of it because it was so tough in the Wyoming wind.
Yeah.
That it would hit Daddy and he couldn't go over 35 miles an hour.
Oh, the wind?
Yeah, and he was traveling by car a lot in those days and it was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here are your sandals.
Alrighty. Well, we can start about anywhere. Well, I started with Dad asking about his Christian upbringing. So why don't you tell me how you found the Lord?
Well, the first time I really became very aware that we needed to be saved, I was 6 years old. And our church decided to have a tent meeting on the other side of town. And I don't know what the preacher said, but it just seemed like a powerful message, and I felt like I had to go forward. I'm not sure I knew all that I was doing, but I went forward and got saved. But later on, I think I understood more when I was about 10. And I was at Vacation Bible School. And that's when I really made a real commitment and I actually knew what I was doing. It wasn't just an emotional experience. I really knew that Jesus was real to me and that I had given in him my heart and my soul and he saved me. He does the saving. We can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then later on, in our church, the church I was going to at that time, they believed you needed two works of grace.
Hmm.
And so we had another camp meeting. And so they believed you needed to be sanctified. Actually, what it is as you understand more what the Christian life is all about, is that's when you, well, more of a total commitment, more of an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
When you understand more, some people would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the next time that something happened big, I guess when that happened, I don't know, I was 13 or 14. I was 14 when I went back. It was probably all the same year. I went back with, we were having an international youth convention in Denver, of the denomination I was going to, and Carol and I wanted to go. And so Mother sent us back with a married couple who was going, and they were going to go on to visit relatives in Missouri or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
So we all got to the big city of Denver, and oh, this was exciting. And they were having lots of, they always had lots of business people there, and we did not have any reservations.
Oh my.
And we went around about half the night trying to find a place to stay. But we ended up in the YWCA, which was just two blocks from the church that they were renting. They were renting a great big church there. And so we could walk.
Well, that's
everywhere.
Nice.
And the other couple stayed a couple days at the meeting, then went on.
Yeah.
But that's when the Lord called me to be a missionary. It was very real, and I knew it, and there was no doubt. I didn't know what, how that would, you know, how that would come about. Of course, at that time, I had no idea. And years later, well, I can expound on that later, I suppose. So what's the next question? That's how I found the Lord in the first place.
Well, go ahead and expound on that. That's fine.
Well, then I thought, well, how, where would the Lord want me to serve and how? Mm-hmm. And so from then on, I always tried to be a good student at school. That was just part of me. And so I really watched my grades closely so I could get a small scholarship someplace. Because mother at that time really did not have enough money to send me anywhere.
Right.
She had enough money for books and maybe a junior college, what we called junior college at that time, two-year college. And at that time, it was almost free. I don't think we even had tuition, we just had to pay pretty much books. Mm-hmm. But I decided, and to do that I would have had to live at home. I didn't want to live at home. I wanted adventure. So I thought, how do I get adventure? And what kind of missionary could I be? What would I do? You know, what if I never married? What could I do without being married? And so I decided a nurse, and I could work in some mission hospital someplace. That was my idea.
Mm-hmm.
Or in a clinic in Mexico, all kinds of ideas. You know, I thought I could be in Africa. I had no idea.
Right.
And of course, the Jewish work at the time, you know, hadn't really soaked into me at all. I didn't know that much about it at all at that time. So, with all that in mind, I got a partial scholarship to nursing school. And, of course, I wanted to go away to an adventurous place to do this. And I didn't want to be right next to home. I wanted a little free space and enjoy the big city. And many years before, Mom had taken us on a vacation right after World War II was over, and we could finally get gas.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't rationed anymore. And she bought, and you couldn't buy decent cars during the war, there were none for sale. So she finally bought a new little Plymouth, and we all went up to Oregon and saw her great aunt who lived out in the way out in the country, and by a mountain stream, and it was a wonderful trip and all that stuff, although some exciting things happened along the way that would make tales forever. Your great-grandma, well, her name was LaVars then.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were already divorced and hadn't been too long, I guess about a year. So we had this new car, and she hadn't been up there in many years because you didn't travel much during the war. There was not gas enough.
Right.
And so somebody told her a shortcut. They didn't tell her that it had all these rocks that would cut your tires to ribbons.
Oh, my.
And still, I'd forgotten how many tires we needed, but our tires blew on a ridge, you know, those like that going,
mm-hmm.
and we had to find a new tire.
Oh no.
And Mother just would go from station to station begging, because you had to have, there just weren't many for sale, and you had to have an awfully good reason for them to sell them their small little quota that they had. So we finally got one. and we continued on the trip. And it was just a wonderful thing, and on the way back, we dropped into San Francisco. There were some relatives, not exactly relatives. I had an adopted grandmother. You've heard me speak of Grandma Getchy. And they had relatives up there and a few friends. And so we all went out to a cafeteria in San Francisco. And that's where I had my first English muffin. I've loved them ever since.
They've been the same since.
And I looked at San Francisco and I thought, oh, this is a wonderful place. I hope I get to come here again. So then that sort of stuck in my mind. And years later, when we were looking for a nursing school, Mother drove me up there and she knew several people. And one was called a sister-in-law of my adopted grandmother. Her name was Tanta Moller, means auntie. Mm-hmm. Tanta is but we actually called her that. We did because that was part of her name. I didn't know any German in those days.
Yeah.
And so when I got ready for school, I went up there on the train. So you can imagine why I'm in love with trains.
Yeah.
And it was so adventurous. And Mother had arranged for me to go immediately on a taxi, told me to take a taxi to Tante Muller's house. Mm-hmm. And she would keep me for a few days before school opened. So we did that, and she had a little family reunion of her own up there of sorts. She had a huge dining room table, and she invited her grandson to be there. And he had been at Stanford for a year and was a very nice young man. And he showed me the town a little bit that night, took me down. She didn't live very far from the ocean. Mm-hmm. So we went down to see Cliff House. You've probably seen that yourself. And just drove around a little bit and came back. And then later on, I dated him a few times until he went away to school. Went to see him in the hospital. He had been on a rowing team and he had injured something and saw him in the hospital. And his folks were real nice to me. And of course, they'd already heard about me from the relatives a long time ago. And they had me play the piano and ask me all about my future hopes and all that sort of stuff. And we got along real nicely, and he was a very outstanding young man, but he went away to school, or could have developed into something, but, you know, being present is always a little better when you he was away down there, and mm-hmm. he would write a Christmas card or a Valentine card, but in between, I saw very little of him, so there were other opportunities. Mm-hmm. And your grandpa, I had met several years earlier. I'm sure you've heard this story. We were at a camp meeting down in the region where we both lived. He lived an hour and a half from where I lived in Colton. I lived in Pomona. And we were at our camp meeting grounds. I have to back up. Well, I'll wait on that part. They also had all sorts of meetings, and they had a youth conference there. Mostly we had the inspirational speakers and all that, but we had fun too. They played games and they had pickup, you know, softball games, you know, mixed. Nobody was a professional or anything.
Yeah.
And of course, they always hoped that the girls and boys would look at boys from their own church and date only Christian boys. Mm-hmm. You know, this is all in their minds while they fixed these things up for us. And so these campgrounds were pretty rustic. They had been previously an army camp. And our church bought it because it had all these, you've seen the army barracks. And you could rent one of these and rent a room in one of these. And then we had bathrooms where down the block where you, all the women went down there. And I don't think we stayed all that pristine.
Probably not.
But we didn't care. So one of these times, your grandpa went to one of these youth things. And I was there with my younger sister. I had just graduated from the 9th grade. This was a big deal. She was a year or two behind me.
That was
Bernice. Mm-hmm. And we were standing in the cafeteria line. And it was a nice long line. And we didn't know it, but there were a couple boys behind us that decided they were going to meet us.
Hmm.
One of them was your grandpa. And so we just chatted with each other and those people immediately around us all the way through this line and got our trays and went out to whatever place we could find. They were just picnic benches, actually, but they were under a roof. And sat down to eat. And these two boys came up and says, "Can we join you?" We thought it was just they were looking for a place to sit. Actually, they had more in mind.
Uh-huh. I see.
They thought they wanted to meet those girls. And so that's how I met your grandpa. And he told me a little bit about himself. And come to find out that his grandmother and aunt had known my aunt, my favorite aunt, for many years.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was your aunt's name?
Aunt Bertha.
Aunt Bertha. Okay.
Aunt Bertha. Her name was Bertha, her maiden name was Gordon, Aunt Bertha Gordon Taylor.
Okay.
And her husband was my favorite uncle, and she was my favorite aunt.
Now, what was his name?
Uncle Thad.
Okay.
Thaddeus Tyrus, whatever it was. He didn't like his name.
Okay. Yeah.
So we called him Thad. And he had, I grew up with, they had four boys,
mm-hmm.
and we were three girls in our family, and the sisters were close. My mother was slightly older than she was. So, anyway, what I didn't recollect or remember was that my Aunt Bertha had known him when he was little before she had moved back to my hometown. She had lived in your daddy's town where he was living in California. He went back and forth between there and Oklahoma for a few years with his aunt and grandmother.
Right.
So they knew each other. And I guess I had seen him as a little boy a time or two when I was very little, but I didn't remember him. He didn't remember me. But they made up their minds when we got the right age, they were going to have us meet. We didn't know all this.
Wow.
We had no idea. Because they knew Lee was bright, and they thought I had some brains, too.
Pretty good.
And they wanted your grandpa to meet a Christian girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had met at this youth thing, but the very next Christmas, they were going to do the formal introduction. They didn't know we'd already met.
Oh, really? Well, that's funny.
If they knew, they didn't.
They probably
didn't say. And so, because there had been nothing transpire in between. We lived, an hour and a half from each other then because the roads weren't so good. Now it's not quite that long. And so that Christmas, Mother was in charge of the Christmas pageant at our church. And she invited, my Aunt Bertha invited us over to meet this family from Colton. and mother knew of them, and she knew their pastor very well. And we had been over to that church a number of times because that pastor had been her pastor when she was a young girl in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And he had taken her through some very difficult times after her mother had died. And tried to help her in many, many ways when things were difficult at home. And so we go over there and meet. My aunt has refreshments and all that sort of thing. And they introduce us to your grandpa to me and vice versa. And we all are talking there a bit. And so your grandpa decided, somehow it was decided, that he would take me home and mother would get home another way. And so, I don't know whether mother went on home first or she came on later. I think she was already in the house. We got there. We visited a while longer with Aunt Bertha and Uncle Thad, who knew him quite well. And so then we went back to the house and we asked each other lots of questions, and he was going to head to college. Or was he already in college? Yeah, he was already in college. But as I said, we had met the summer before, just briefly. But we hadn't really talked except over lunch. Of course, the one thing he did do at that summertime thing was, have I already said something about the softball game?
They picked up matches. People.
Well, they had said he went out to play, and everybody was just in their regular clothes and everything, and I was just watching the game, just a few of us. And he came up to me and says, I'm going to go out. I'm going to hit you a home run. And he went out and hit the first ball and hit me a home run. And I was floored.
Oh, my.
I thought, wow. So then, speed up again, you know, the next, what is this, a year later or something? 6 months later, I can't remember. So we just talk about this, that, and the other. And by this time, he's in school. He's been there about one semester. And he's asking me what I'm taking in school and all that sort of thing. And I told him I was taking Latin. He says, I never did take Latin. I took Spanish. But I know one thing in Latin that I learned. And it was ego amo te. And he says, of course, that probably doesn't apply right now because that means I love you. Oh, it was very thick. So we just sat there on our front steps, and he says, well, how about us writing? So I said, okay, if you write me, I'll write you back. So he wrote me about 5 letters, and I spent a great deal of time on mine just trying to be newsy and not knowing exactly what to say. And then I didn't hear from him. I don't know. At that time, my time schedule gets a little mixed up here. But then he came home from spring break. And I thought his spring break was the same as our high school one, but it was not. So meanwhile, I was going to have a birthday, my 16th birthday. So I wrote a note and said, we're going to have a party. Would he like to come? So I didn't hear from him. So then about a month later, I got a note from him. It says, I received your invitation, and I'm just now home for my break, and he would like to see me. And or how about us getting together or something? And I said, well, this is going to be my real birthday. This previous thing had been a different kind of party. I think it was a church party or something,
yeah.
Now that I recollect. And I said, I'm going to have my 16th birthday, and I'm having my mom is going to fix a nice birthday dinner and all that sort of thing. I'd like for you to come. So he came over, and there was another couple there from my church, one of my best church girlfriends and her boyfriend. And we had this real nice dinner. Then we all went to a place about an hour away called the Pasadena Playhouse and saw a play, and then we drove home. And on the way, I sat a little bit close to your grandpa in the car, and he took my hand and put it on his lap and drove with the other hand, and I thought, oh, I'm touching him. Should I be doing that? Oh my. So I'm touching his leg. Should I be letting my hand rest on his leg? I'm really worried about that. So we got home, and the other kids got in the other fellow's car, and they went on home. They had ridden in the back seat all the way. Mm-hmm. And then we went up, and we sat in the car for a few minutes, and my mother and my sisters and somebody who was renting a room from us at the time, named Georgine, who was came down there from Canada to spend the winters because she had something that she needed to be in warmer weather. Mm-hmm. They were all peeking out the windows to see if I was going to get kissed.
Oh, wow. And?
So there we were in the car, and your grandpa gave me the most heavenly kiss. I've never forgotten it to this day. And the thing that impressed me was he had such manly whiskers. I was just enthralled, because my father, I'm sure I've told you this, Lindsay, had a disease when he was young, and it had taken